Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Here's what I want to chat about.
Mm-hmm.
Beards.
Okay.
I like my beard. I like the way it looks, but it itches me.
Even my beard itches me if it's like growing in, but like once I have it like fully there, it doesn't itch me anymore.
I don't know how big mine has to get, how voluminous it has to get until
how long have you had your beard currently? Like how many days has it been on your face?
3 weeks, maybe three and a half.
Oh yeah,
I grew it while I was in Yosemite.
Mine's not itchy at that point.
If you have beard advice or suggestions for me on how to get my beard de-itched.
I wonder if people are going to recommend beard oil.
I use beard oil.
I don't.
I take care of my beard.
Maybe that's your problem. You should stop using beard oil. All
right. Well, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
All I do is comb my beard.
No, maybe I should do that.
That's all I do.
Maybe I need a beard massage. Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, it does. $20 at the barber.
You're going to hear an interview we did with Kathy Kung. Coming up here, and this is a great interview. She was awesome, and she also put me on blast, so be listening for that. And, you know, I think I deserved it.
Yeah.
I tend to have a lot of, I don't know, it's hard for me to adjudicate when somebody, like, lets me have it, you know, because my ego wants to be like, no, now you're going to get it.
Yeah.
But I tend to just receive it, especially, I try to receive it especially from women. I just assume, you know, if I receive some sort of blast from a woman and it's undeserved, well, now we've got like another 9,000 to go.
Yeah.
I can make up for all the missteps I've made.
Right, and the times that you didn't get put on blast.
Yeah, or the times I, you know, did the same thing to somebody who didn't deserve it.
Yeah. Although I don't remember exactly what she said in this interview, but I don't know if I would categorize it as putting you on blast.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Let the listener decide.
Yeah, we'll let the listener decide.
But putting me on blast, there's a lot of ambiguity in that phrase.
Yeah, right.
I just remember thinking...
It was kind of a direct statement of like... I can't remember now what it was.
I just remember thinking, she couraged up today. Like, she's letting me have it. She got back just from doing yoga. She was probably in her body, and she just was like, boom. Yeah. Here it is, buddy.
Yeah.
And I need that. I need more of that in my life. If you want to come on and put me on blast, just do it. I'm all
just
for it.
Just do it.
Just do it.
It's really good.
Hit us,
really
hit
good
us
for
up.
Matt. It's really good for all of us when everybody puts Matt on blast.
I need more Kathy Kong in my life. She was a great interview. And we just...
Really great.
We'll get to that right away. Short.
In short order.
In short order. Mm. But we are booking workshops.
Yep. That's kind of the main emphasis that we're doing right now at Gravity is booking workshops for 2020. So I know a lot of churches are putting together budgets. And if you would like for us to come and invest in your people, it's a great way to... There's something about having somebody... like even if you resonate with all this stuff and you feel like you've been talking to people and people in your church about it for a long time, there's something really helpful about having someone else...
Yep.
From the outside, kind of come in and say some of the same things.
Yep.
It's just really helpful. People feel like they're part of something that's bigger than just pastors talking about whatever again.
Right.
So, workshops on parenting, Enneagram, Church in the Wild. We're also open to just, you know, if you've got something that, you know, we're open to doing some customized stuff as well.
That's how we developed our first three workshops.
Yep. It was just people asking us to do stuff. So we're like, well, okay, we'll do that.
We do stuff, too, stuff. So let us know.
Let us know. So it's gravityleadership.com/workshops. You can get all the information there, and you can reach out to us about booking something for you and your church in 2020. Also, don't forget our membership community on Patreon, patreon.com/gravityleadership. You can join us, become a patron, and support and partner with the work that we're doing, and hear another podcast that we have, the Practitioner Podcast, where we just talk a little bit more vulnerably, a little bit more intimately about stuff that we don't want just on the internet.
Broadcast. I'm fixing to get my words in order for the next one.
Fixing?
I was just ranting to you about it before we hit record.
Ranting and raving.
It's
important stuff. It's how we get abuse wrong in the church, how we get relationships wrong.
I have two friends right now, one male, one female, both accused of some kind of abuse.
Yeah,
and the church is gaffling it. What is that? Is that a word? Blowing it,
gaffling it,
gaffling.
I don't think that's a word, but it should be.
I did preface this with, I need to get my words in order.
Oh, yeah, right. This is part of it.
And now I'm talking without my words in order.
Right. They're completely flafflaffling the situation.
Kathy is someone who does have her words in order. So
she does.
Enjoy this, friends. Good morning. Well, you might be listening to this in the evening.
Who knows when?
Good day.
1 a.m.
Good day to you. Today, this is the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Matt. You probably know that by now. I'm with my friend, Ben.
Mm-hmm. I'm here as well.
You're wearing your red Liverpool shirt today?
Yeah, we're recording this on the first day of the Premier League.
It's a big deal for you.
I'm super excited.
It's a big deal for you.
I'm a big Liverpool fan.
Not only are you wearing a red shirt, you're also wearing your Pentecost shoes.
Yep, yep. I bring out these shoes. I work out in these shoes, but I also wear them whenever I watch Liverpool, and I also wear them on Pentecost Sunday because they're red.
They're bright red.
Because they're bright red.
Yep. When I was a kid, I remember this VHS set in our little... Remember VHS tapes?
Yeah.
And it sat in our little cabinet, and there was a movie called The Man with the One Red Shoe.
Oh.
And I remember always asking to watch it. My mom said no. It was like... It was like that Turkish delight.
What's in that movie?
Yeah. But have you had Turkish delight?
No.
It's not that good.
It's not that good.
It must have been Enchanted then. That's how you know it was Enchanted Turkish delight, because Edmund loved it so much.
Can you imagine if it was like a pixie stick, like one of those giant 3-foot pixie sticks?
Right.
Edmund's shoveling the sugar right down his gullet.
Right.
Hey, that voice you just heard. Is our guest today, Kathy Kung from the suburbs of Chicago. Say hi, Kathy.
Hey, everyone.
Yeah, and Kathy is here. We're doing a series on power, as you know, and Kathy has written an amazing book about owning and claiming and naming and inhabiting and embodying and theologically rooting the power of our voice in social spaces. And she tells her story in the book, and it's really powerful, and I'm learning a lot. Kathy, we're going to talk about that today, but would you give us an introduction, who you are? I've already kind of outed you as a Chicagoite, but what you spend your time doing and what you do there in Chicago.
Sure. So I have had Turkish Delight. It really wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that great, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was the one thing that I had asked my parents when they visited Turkey, if they could bring it back for me and my kids. So it was like literally from Turkey. And I was like, oh, wow. That's it? I was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
So
Edmund's even more of a sucker now.
Yeah, yeah. It clearly was not enchanted.
A giant pixie stick would have been better, I think, in my opinion. Yeah. So I live in the Chicago suburbs. I also say that I am the mother of three, wife of one. Mm-hmm. And I'm a writer. I do some speaking. I just left in February, 21 years with a campus ministry organization.
Oh, wow.
After that many years in vocational ministry. And so right now I'm sort of a stay-at-home mom, sort of. But my kids are ginormous. So the only two kids at home are my 17-year-old son, who starts his senior year of high school on Monday, and then my 20-year-old junior in college. So it's actually, if you're going, if I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom, this is the way to do it.
This is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Basically adult children.
Everybody's wiping their own bottom at this point.
That's, at that point, yeah, that's good.
They
that's
can go to the grocery store. They can fix their own food, do their own laundry. It's wonderful. And I also teach yoga. So.
Oh, that's fun.
I love yoga, Kathy. Can I just...
loves yoga.
Can I self-disclose a bit?
Yes.
I don't mind.
I find... Kathy, help me out here. I find that when I do yoga after like a week or two of not doing it, and I just start breathing and stretching... Mm-hmm. I immediately get super emotional. Like I think I get constipated emotionally, and I start doing yoga, and like my body's like, well, there you are. Yeah. Now that I got your attention,
you can,
here's some things
now you can
need.
Feel things. Here's some things you should have been feeling this whole week.
Oh goodness.
Yes.
So you teach yoga.
I do.
Oh.
I do.
Does that mean like you lead yoga sessions and classes, or is that something more?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So I just came back this morning.
Okay.
And taught my class, and then realized I didn't have the Zoom link for our podcast.
Real life, but behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. Yeah. But you showed up on time. It was fine.
All right.
You figured it out.
Before we let you go, Kathy, after interview, I want your yoga recommendations. Who do I need to like? Who do I need to like apprentice myself to?
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
That's good.
All right. I've got one person I pay attention to, but I'm just not sure if it's the best. I'm not a yoga master, a yogi. Anyway, Kathy, I was particularly, we asked you to come on our show for a few reasons. One, we are two white dudes who host this podcast. There's a third guy who also hosts it. And there's never been a time in my life when I didn't think people needed to hear my voice.
Mm. Yes,
I just kind of
hear that.
I roll out of the womb thinking, you're welcome.
Yes.
Here I am, and I got a voice. Right? And I'm realizing that there needs to be some self-reflection on why is that the case, and how did I come to just believe that in my bones? You know, it's not something I've assented to. But in your book, you describe your journey of learning how to own and claim and name your voice. Will you just tell us a bit about what was it about that journey that led you to write this book?
Good question. I realized that I wasn't the only one who was not born out of the womb thinking that everybody ought to be grateful to hear what I had to say or engage in what I saw happening in the world. And I also realized that it was harming the church. It was harming the kingdom of God. It was harming the world when we don't help others own their power, own their voice, be comfortable in their own skin, because we don't actually get to engage with the fullness of what God has created for us. So I realized that I was harming my family and my friends and myself by not being myself and not really owning my voice and the space.
Yeah. So walk us through that. What did that, what was the story you told yourself? How did that play out? Why, what did it look like for Kathy not to own her voice?
Sure. Well, I'm Korean American. I am an immigrant. I came when I was 8 months old with my parents, and, my first language was not English. It was Korean. And then I got all confused when I hit elementary school, and literally I didn't have a voice. I didn't know the language. I didn't know how to communicate. And I actually don't have a lot of memories from that time of my life. And I blame it. And well, blame maybe not, may not be the best way to put it, but I think that it, part of it is I was going through this language acquisition and I couldn't put together memory with language, with words.
Wow.
So even finding my voice literally was a challenge because I had this other language that I could communicate fully in, and then entered into a space where there were kids my age, but no way to communicate with them. Wow. And then quickly realized that there were different spaces in which a different version of my voice was and was not acceptable. Mm. So growing up in the Korean immigrant church, you know, women held certain roles, girls did certain things. Mm. And that also played off kind of in the real world, you know, what women did or didn't do, who you see doing certain things. And then I think for me, that just carried on. You know, it carried on through school, it carried on through college. And it was very confusing for me in college to meet a group of other Asian American Christians who were thoughtful. I loved that. Who were thoughtful, who looked like me, who had similar kind of cultural experiences and wrestling with family and the world and all those expectations. And I will say the biggest shock then was landing my first job out of college and the little things like calling my boss by his first name. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
It didn't feel respectful enough?
It didn't. It felt very inappropriate. It felt wrong. And so, right, there are times where you're asked and you're told, use your voice, do these things without any reflection back on maybe that's actually not the best way to empower somebody. Maybe that's not the best way to establish trust. And I just remember thinking, I cannot call him Roger. He's Mr. Schneider. I still remember. and that, you know, and that continues. That's still a part of the inner voice that I have to go back and forth on.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I was just thinking about, I mean, when you first started telling your story a little bit, Kathy, I was just thinking about the fact that I think over the course of the last week, three women in groups or with me in a conversation have apologized for crying.
Yes.
They've apologized for crying. And I was thinking about that for some reason as you were talking, because I think that's one of the ways in which women in particular are conditioned to think that like that part of their voice or that part of their experience is unacceptable.
Right.
Right. It's, or it's something to be like, oh man, I did it again. I shouldn't be doing this.
There I go again. Being a quote woman.
Being emotional.
Yeah. Being emotional as if it's not okay. You know what I mean? And so it's one of the things that I noticed, I guess as you were talking that I've actually come to appreciate when it happens, because there's something beautiful that actually happens in the room when someone shares vulnerably to the point where, yes, tears are shed. Anyway, so I'm trying to figure out how to react to that when someone, you know, a woman specifically is like, I'm sorry, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do like, it's okay, like, or like, you don't have to apologize. Or stop apologizing. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. So I'm trying to learn what to say in those environments.
What would be a good response?
What would you say is a good response, Kathy, to like, you know, because what well, I, the message
helpful,
I want
yeah. Yeah, yeah, what's helpful to you?
What's helpful for you?
Well, so there are two things around that, because even, So I can relate. I'm often finding myself apologizing, or I am around other women who, after every statement they make, they apologize, whether or not there's any tears or like, right. Oh, I'm when sorry. I'm sorry. I'm like, sorry for what? Would you like breathe?
Right. Yes. Right.
So that
I'm sorry, but I'm going
to
talk.
So
now,
that's trying to figure out what's appropriate.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is in that moment, what's appropriate? Is it in front of other people? Will it embarrass her even more to say, "Hey, what's going on?"
Right.
But I also think that it's important for those of us who tend to be more emotional and expressive in our emotions, that I have realized that it's also part of the power.
Yes,
right.
It
going
is.
Back to the theme that I've learned that sometimes I can actually hijack a meeting with my emotions, right? If I'm not self-aware, I can bring a meeting to a screeching halt.
Yes.
Because nobody knows what to do because I'm crying and they don't know if it's insensitive to move on.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So I've had to understand that as well, and to be able to self lead, self regulate, and say, where is that emotion coming from? And then to be able to communicate externally and say, you know what? I know I'm crying, and I know that that might make other people uncomfortable. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Just give me a minute to catch my breath, and then I will keep talking. And I have found that in that moment, it is helpful for people to be aware of the power dynamics. Right? Is what kind of power does that moment bring? How are other people responding?
Yes.
How can we, in a helpful way, name that? And is it something then we have to stop and go back and like do some other work around, or then can we move forward?
That's great. That's great. It's all contextual.
Yes.
But those power dynamics need to be kept in mind the whole time.
So yes.
One example that I'll just give that I think plays this out is in one of these situations, it was a, we do these coaching groups where people, it's Gravity Leadership Academy. We do these groups of leaders who are present, and we're sort of learning to pay attention to what God's doing in our life. And so it is a pretty vulnerable space, and that's what's expected, you know, in that environment. And so this one woman on this call was sharing about something that was like, it was really powerful. It was really meaningful for the whole group. It was really helpful. But she found herself crying, and that's what she apologized for. She said, I'm sorry. You know, I always cry. And so in that moment, it felt, I'm in charge of this meeting, right? So that's part of the power dynamic. She's the only woman on this call. It's another part of the dynamic, right? So in that meeting, it felt appropriate to me to say, it's okay. You don't need to apologize, because what you've offered to us is a gift.
Yes.
And we receive, and everybody, I could see that everybody was receiving it, you know, like people were receiving the gift, and it was helpful for us. And so I just, I tried to honor her to say,
yes,
thank you. You know, that thing that you just apologized for, actually, thank you. Like you don't need to apologize for it, but we honor that and we receive that from you.
Yes.
So that's fascinating, Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy. One of the things you talked about in how you navigate those situations is you talked about being aware of the power dynamics and how they're at play. Mm. And one of the things I'm waking up to, and we're hearing from other people as well, is that not everybody's aware of power dynamics in these social spaces. That you actually have to have a certain kind of conceptual tool packet. That usually is socialized into you from a young age in order to recognize just, you know, it's like, you know, the water that you're swimming in, you don't recognize it unless you're a giraffe. And you're like, I shouldn't be here.
You know? Besides water.
Right.
Yeah. And so could you, you tell a story in your book about a moment when you felt sort of this burden, conviction, compulsion to speak, to ask questions, and something really arresting and fascinating happened to you. Would you share that story? Because I think it's such a picture, right, of maybe what a lot of people experience metaphorically.
Hmm. Correct. So I was in a large staff meeting, and that was exactly it. There were things being said and reported back, and you could tell in the room, we all, many of us had the same questions in our minds. And, you know, I'm sure many of us have been in those meetings where you're making eye contact with people and trying to figure out who's going to name the five elephants in the room.
Okay.
You're not. Oh, you look down. You're not going to be the one. And this sense of this meeting is going to end and it can't end without we need to address this. We can't do this. And so I finally kind of realized, okay, I guess I'm going to do this. I'll do this. Take a deep breath. And I start to speak. And my friend who was next to me, who also knew, you know, the elephant in the room, reached over and in a reflexive and I think familiar joking sort of way, but powerful way, covered my mouth with her hand.
Physically, like literally covered your mouth?
Literally, oh, wow. Literally.
That's amazing.
And you know, I have friends who, you know, will say something and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. And you do that. You hit each other and you're right. Like, you give each other the look like, I can't believe you just said that. I mean, I know we were all thinking it, but I can't believe you said
it. Yeah, I can't believe you.
And so, right. So it happens. And so she covered my mouth. And in that split second, I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
None of us are going to say it. Like, we're so afraid of naming the elephant in the room. And so I pushed her hand away and kind of took another breath and then carried on. And I do think you're right. It happens metaphorically. It happens. It happens with retribution for a lot of us.
Yes.
Right. So it's the smack on the side, the look across the room, no one says anything, the meeting ends, and then afterwards you get the, I can't believe you said that. Mm. Or what were you thinking? Or like, okay, now we're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, now what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And for me, it was one of those moments where I physically realized the power of your voice. Right. When you are the one who finally says the thing that you know other people are thinking, but are counting the cost, what happens? Yeah. And I'll never forget it. But I carry that because I know that happens. You don't need a hand to cover your mouth. I think a lot of us do that self-censoring anyway.
Yeah.
Right. And so people are aghast, and I knew people would be, but I'd like to push people and say, but when have you done that to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Or when have you done that to somebody else?
To other people.
Yeah.
After the fact.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. So if someone's listening and, so first of all, Kathy, you're a baller. Like, that's a baller thing to do, and I would have loved to have been there because that would have been awesome. Secondly, someone's listening, and they hear that story, and they think, oh my gosh, I could never do that.
Yeah.
I could never do that. If someone's listening, and either they are scared of their voice or have no idea how to find their voice, what would be some advice you would give them on how to begin exploring that?
For me, it continues to be a journey in understanding what are the things that I am most passionate about and what are the things happening in this world, big and small, that I can't stay quiet about because the cost is too high when we stay silent. And sometimes it's the little things like, you know, I'm a mom. My ginormous children used to be small and young. And there's nothing worse than seeing your kid be hurt by another child.
Yes.
And it's innocent. It's, you know, they're not playing nice at the playground or someone grabs, you know, your kid's truck and you're like, oh, I'm gonna hurt you. Right. And so I think it's those types of moments where you have to learn Like, what are you going to do and how will you handle this so that, one, it doesn't cause more harm to anyone involved, but also tries to correct and speak of the values and the love that you have in that moment. Because as much as I don't enjoy those big times in a meeting where you're like, are we seriously not going to talk about this? At the end of the day, for me, and I think this is part of finding your voice, owning it, is, do I love these people enough to take this moment and maybe be wrong, embarrass myself, stretch this meeting out longer than it needs to be or is convenient for me and deal with the thing that we need to deal with. Because there's a lot of stuff in this world I don't really care about the people, right? So I'm just going to honk my horn or like yell at the driver in my car because I don't really, I mean, I'm just, my ego is hurt. Why did you cut me off? But like the bigger things in life, I think, come for me out of a place of love.
Yes.
Sure.
Kathy, I think that's important. What you said early on there, oftentimes the reason we're silent is that the cost of speaking up weighs, it looms really large for us. We know that that will cost us some embarrassment or maybe it's our job, you know what I mean? Something more serious even, friendships, you know, that kind of thing. The cost of that looms so large that we stay silent. But I think I like what you've said, that we also have to add up the cost of staying silent, that is costing us something as well.
Yes.
And that we don't oftentimes add it up and quantify it and name it, but it's actually really important to name because it is costing us something to stay silent.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. And I love how you've attached it to love as well, that ultimately staying silent is most of the time, in the way that you're talking about it, staying silent is a self-preservation kind of an instinct rather than an instinct of self-giving love.
Yes. It's very much a part of the, like, how am I going to feel? What is comfortable for me? And then for me, that's part of the beauty that I love about being Korean American, that the cultural upbringing of being both and the Korean culture being much more communal as opposed to the American culture, really, which is about like the individual and all of that, that for me, the pushing and the pulling of the two forces me to decide, how does it look like to walk with Jesus? What does it look like to lead out of that space? And it isn't about self-preservation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Gosh, Kathy, so many questions are flowing through my head. One of the things I've been wrestling with is, what's the difference in my voice in a meeting, like what you described, face to face as a pastor with you know, somebody, someone who doesn't have power and I have power? How do I use my voice there? One of the quagmires for me right now is social media, and you know, there's such an acerbic kind of strident tone on social media. I typically play nice. The last couple weeks, I've been telling people how I really feel, and some people don't like that. What have you learned about how our voice, how to be faithful with our voice on social media, and how is that different than in real life or person to person?
Yes, person to person. It's a lot easier to be nasty on social media, and it's a lot easier to present yourself as something you are not. And so... And I think in some ways that's easiest on a platform like Instagram, where it's all visual, fewer words. Yeah. So you can paint your life as being very beautiful, very beautiful, very, very pretty. And you know, and Twitter, you can present yourself as being very witty and, you know, fast and all of those types of intelligent. And so again, It is that self-leadership and recognizing the size of your platform, the number of followers. Yes, that plays into the whole power dynamic, but if your tweet goes viral, it doesn't matter that you only had 400 followers. Your words can be spread across millions of times. And what does that mean? Yeah. So I do think that the danger is that on social media, we can get snippier and shorter with people and only take people in the context of the one post or the one comment.
Right.
And it's fast. Social media is also fast. What happened on Twitter an hour ago is old.
It's old news. Yeah. You forget about
and,
it.
Right. And Facebook is just a bunch of old people now.
Yep.
The young kids are not on Facebook.
Yeah. So true. Kathy, I'm 43. I'm on Facebook. So I yeah, I see that.
I'm older than you. I'm older than you are.
Yeah.
Very true. You know. So I'm as old, I'm Facebook old. Like there was a physical Facebook when I went to college, right? Like it was a paper Facebook. That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. They called them yearbooks, right?
It was a book of faces.
We dug up a time capsule in high school and they had a yearbook in it. That's how I remember.
Yearbook. But in college, as a freshman, there was a Facebook of all of the freshmen at the beginning of the year.
It was called a Facebook?
It was called, I don't think it was called Facebook, but it was like the freshmen. So that's where they got the idea.
Yeah, okay.
Book of faces where you could, you know. And just so it's the first impression that you make.
Yeah.
And so I do tell people that don't go on social media if you don't have the stomach for it. You don't have to be there, right? Yeah. So then figure out why you're there, right? Yeah. Oh, I hate it. Then why are you there? Quit complaining. Right?
It is an opt-in thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's not
right. It
it's
is
not required.
It is not. It isn't. It is not required. I know people who do not have any social media platforms.
Right.
And they're still alive and they're human and they're functioning and they have jobs and friends.
They have real human lives.
So if you don't want to engage, don't be on it. But if you are on it, be wise.
Yeah.
And take comments within the context of the profile, right? So if I have somebody who I think is trolling me, I automatically go to their profile and I start scrolling and I try to see what is public. You know, they have a family, or at least they're pretending to have a family, right? Like they have a, you know,
they want me
this,
to think
they're that. Yeah. And so I have to remember, okay, well, this is, I'm gonna engage with them like they are a real person.
Yeah.
And that's part of it.
Yeah, I was. Ben and I were at a faith and race symposium yesterday in downtown Indianapolis, and it was. I have to actively seek out contexts where I am a minority.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have to make that happen. It doesn't just happen unless I make it happen.
And people like me aren't in charge.
Yeah, people like me aren't setting the agenda in charge, and the flavor, the culture, the ethos, the aesthetic of the room isn't tuned to my cultural temperature. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I was struck by a comment that a woman made. She was talking about getting active in this group's fights for racial and criminal justice and social justice. And she said, and I know some of you are afraid to get involved, what it'll cost you with your congregations. And she said, I get it. I'm afraid every day my son leaves the house that he's going to be shot.
Mm-hmm.
She said, if I can get over that to do this, then you can get over being scared about what people will think.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, I get the point. But I'm noticed that I tend to have to navigate with my voice, like my whole metrics of like speaking is like really, it's really jacked up. It's like, I'm not thinking if I don't speak, my son's gonna die. I think if I speak, this person might get offended at me.
Yes.
And I might have to answer a long email.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I felt like so convicted by that. Like what am I trying to say, Ben? Like what's at stake or the cost of me speaking or not speaking feels so infinitesimal to other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Like they have to speak or else...
It's survival.
It's survival for them. Right. And for me, it's an opt-in, opt-out preference. Mm-hmm. If I have time today, I might say something about important about justice.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And so I guess I'm convicted to reclaim my voice in a way that it's not necessary for my survival, but I'm also wanting to
correct.
Yeah, but I'm also wanting to do it in a way that is helpful.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, Kathy, are you understanding what I'm saying?
I do. And I think part of it is it's, you know, I don't know what it's like to be either of you. I don't know what it's like to have to seek out places where I'm not the norm or the center. And even in spaces that are more diverse and different and led by non-white people, oftentimes the ways in which we've been taught leadership and taught about how to create spaces is still from a very male, white, dominant culture way of doing things. Right?
That's
leadership looks a certain way.
Right.
And it is outspoken. Mm. It is clear. It is educated. But if I am too outspoken, too clear, too educated, then I am aggressive, angry, uppity. Yeah. Who do I think I am? That kind of thing.
Yes.
So it is complicated. I do understand what you're saying. And I see it a lot. And it is that I see a lot of my white friends, men and women, really wrestling with their fragility and that fear of, oh, I might offend somebody or I might not get this right because suddenly I'm not in a context where everything and anything I say is, yes, I agreed.
Yeah.
And
that's good.
And so how do then you engage by using your voice to maybe not speak, right?
Yeah.
To make room for those whose concerns are actually when my son goes out, I worry about his life, right? And again, it is understanding your power and where you sit in that because I don't worry about that. Yeah. We live in a white suburb where my Korean American sons are not going to get pulled over and worry about a suburban cop pulling out their gun.
Right.
I do worry about them going out and being in a group of kids who are not like them and being singled out, right? Being the one kid who gets caught.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny when we kind of step back and go, oh my gosh, the things that we're worried about are so different.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? But at the end of the day, it's recognizing each other's humanity in that and how we have valued your humanity as white men far above the humanity of others. And so how then do you manage your power in the words you speak or choose not to speak or the words you elevate of others or learn from?
Yes.
And then when you make a mistake, what do you do?
That's really good.
Right? This morning, there was a quote by one of the gazillion presidential candidates for the Democratic nomination, and he made a huge blunder, and it showed his racial bias.
Oh, I saw this.
I saw this too.
Right? It showed his racial bias.
Totally.
And it's just, I mean, people are dragging him and all this kind of stuff, and all I can think of is there no one on his team that he will listen to because all he needed to say is, wow, you know what I just said? That's something we all need to work on.
Yeah.
Right? We have our biases.
That's right.
And that slip of the tongue, that came from somewhere.
Yeah. Just admit
and
it.
I need
just
to,
own
right?
it.
Right? Just admit it. I'm sorry. Whoa. Yeah.
Raise your voice and say, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I'm sorry. I was wrong.
Yes.
That was bad.
Kathy, I think that's so important. Especially like if you are listening and you're a white man, like that, because I think our instinct oftentimes is, you know, we learn something or we get, you know, we hear about, you know,
African-American women who worry about their sons being shot. And then I think our instinct oftentimes is to say, okay, great. And then we kind of try to use the power that we have, like in the old ways, to educate everybody about this new thing that I know about now. You know what I mean? And so like, listen up, everybody. Yeah. You know, and we rather than that posture, which is so so much more beautiful and I think so much more helpful of, oh, I'm wrong. Yeah. You know, it's not like here I am as the white man again, who now I have the right answers.
Right.
But I can show up in a new way as somebody who gets it wrong. I can show up as somebody who's learning. I can show up as somebody who doesn't have anything to say right now. You know what I mean? Like, I can do that. Ugh,
yes.
That's so helpful.
That is helpful. Kathy, I have to confess, since you've talked about your kids twice as ginormous, every time you mention them, I picture these like 6'8", hulking 300-pound Korean American. Yeah. You know, like, I know that's not what probably is accurate.
Ginormous children.
It just,
yes. Yeah, they're both almost 6 feet tall.
Okay.
So they are ginormous.
They are tall, and they're tall for me because, again, they were my babies, and I'm like, I have to go on my tippy toes to like,
give them a hug now. Yeah.
And they love to look down and be like, Mom. So
that's great.
Our precious little mom.
Hey, yes. I just want to reflect back, Kathy, that I really appreciate you taking my word salad and breaking it down so easily. Mm. And what I heard from you is I tend to speak or not speak based upon my resilience to my own white fragility. Yeah. And other people tend to speak or not speak based upon survival.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, that's embarrassing.
Mm.
I'm like, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
And it should be.
Yeah.
Right? And it's survival, not just for myself, but for our communities. That's it. It's for our communities because if someone in our community does something negative or perceived as negative, it often is reflected back on all of us.
Mm.
Right. Years ago, the Virginia Tech shooter.
Yep.
And when we heard, and I remember hearing about the shooting because I was in campus ministry at the time. And right away, it's like, please don't let the shooter be black. Please don't let the shooter be black. Please don't let the shooter be black. And turned out that the shooter was Korean American.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, oh my God. Okay. And I remember telling my boys, you cannot go outside with your Nerf guns.
Oh, man.
You cannot go outside and pretend to shoot anything. Those marshmallow spit gun things that we made, no, you are not allowed.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of it as well, that it's self-preservation for our community. And not just our individual selves.
Yeah. And and we're in the shadow of the El Paso, Texas and the Dayton shootings.
Yes.
And no one's asked me to explain or decry white on white violence.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I have no fear about my son.
And it didn't affect I'm not me
sure,
as a white man at all.
I'm not sure if there's any amount of violence white people can perpetuate that will that will ever change that.
Yeah.
Kathy, where do we send our check? I feel like we just got an education. We want to commend this Raise Your Voice book. I think because we're scratching on how to elevate and center other voices. So one of the things in leadership we try to help leaders get an imagination for, not just a tacit agreement to, is we exist to build up the body of Christ, to equip the saints for the work of ministry. Mm-hmm. And part of that in this cultural moment, more than ever, because we have lenses and stories to hear it, like your book, is it's time to center and honor and listen to other voices.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what it means to equip the saints for the work of ministry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. How can people continue to connect with you? I mean, obviously, we're going to put a link to your book in your show notes, but what other ways can they encounter the kinds of things that you're thinking about and doing?
They can find me on social media.
Oh.
I am fairly active there on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is at Ms. Kathy Kong. And then I'm also on Facebook. I encourage people to go to my author page on Facebook. I'm running out of space for personal, actual friends in real life or people that I've met on my personal page, but that's really where they can encounter me. And then I have a blog, KathyKong.com, and I try to keep my speaking engagement schedule fairly up to date.
Okay.
And that's what they can do. And then they'll find other voices to follow, other people that they should be learning from.
That's great.
When they click on
That's
there.
That's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Kathy. This has been a great education.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Really.
I'm glad other people listen to this podcast, but I would do it if nobody listened.
Just for
because
me.
Just for these interviews and all that we learn. It's
good.
Really helpful. Thank you for
Peace
being part
you.
Of that, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you, so please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.